So before we begin, though, are you pro or against A-B testing?
Yeah, I mean, I am generally against it. Okay. I made the case sort of just outlining all of the very serious issues that I felt both theoretically as well as pragmatically on the implementation side that I have seen go wrong with A-B testing for a long time.
Hi, this is Roma Santiago, founder of Experiment Nation. On today's episode, I debate the merit of A-B testing with Solomon Kahn, the CEO and founder of Delivery Layer. If you're a CRO or experimenter, you're not going to want to miss this episode. Enjoy.
Awesome. Hi, everyone. My name is Romo Santiago, and I'm the founder of Experiment Nation. And today we have a great guest. His name is Solomon Kahn. He is the founder and CEO of Delivery Layer. Solomon, I'd love for you to introduce yourself to our audience.
Sure. Firstly, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I'm excited to have this chat. I've been a data leader for a long time. Have held jobs at startups, big companies, consulting companies. And I am currently the founder of a startup called Delivery Layer, which focuses on customer-facing data applications. So I used to work at Nielsen. If you think about the stereotype of Nielsen, amazing data, and then, you know, customers needing to use web applications and APIs to access that data. And so those are the types of applications that Delivery Layer as a product focuses on. And I'm sure you're going to get into why we're on this podcast talking about A-B testing in just a second.
Yeah, for sure. But I think it's, you know, it's clear you have a strong background and deep background in data. You've seen it all. You've seen the small, you've seen the big, worked at Nielsen, have your own startup. These are all the wide variety of data situations that one can face. So I think it's safe to say that, you know, you're pretty schooled in it. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I've been around the block a couple times. So yeah, and you know, at the same time, many people have other experiences than I do. So I don't want to overstate either. But I've been working in the field for a long time, trying to navigate business decision making with data.
And that's exactly the topic today. Recently, you posted this a YouTube video as well as a LinkedIn post about a topic which would be of great interest to our audience. You made a case against A-B testing. This is Experiment Nation, so of course all my audience is going to go, what? And you listed a lot of reasons about reasons against A-B testing. I'd love to get into that. So before we begin, though, are you pro or against A-B testing?
Yeah, I mean, I am generally against it. I made the case sort of just outlining all of the very serious issues that I felt both theoretically as well as pragmatically on the implementation side that I have seen go wrong with A-B testing for a long time. And when you look at the entire state of A-B testing as it is right now in the market, I think it is a very reasonable thing to say maybe we shouldn't be doing this. Now, I'll take another step back to say that this is Experiment Nation, right? So yeah. What I'm not against and what I'm absolutely not against is experimentation. In fact, I think we need to be doing more experimentation. And what
I'd love to dig into that, the nuance between the two.
Yeah, because it's important. It's very important. What I've seen a lot of is false confidence and a belief in very high precision when people are doing A-B tests. And I don't think a lot of that confidence is warranted. And I think instead, a sort of what I talked about in the video and in comments online was sort of more of a track your metrics and use common sense as you're doing experiments to see how things are changing and let that guide your business decisions, as opposed to relying on the results of A-B testing systems, which I think are can in many cases will not be as precise as you think they are.
So essentially, you are, if we just define experimenting as trying a thing out and seeing what happens, I think we can agree that's something we should all be doing.
Absolutely necessary, 100%. Because you, whether you have an idea, you test it out, and you want if it either will work or not work in the data, and you should be able to see that. So 100%.
So I guess the gap is when you get down to like statistics and a confidence level. Is that where the issue is?
Where one of the big issues are. Yes, correct.
Okay, 18.
Or that's some fair. Of them. Some of them fall under that that category.
Okay, so we've made some distinction between experimentation and A-B testing, where one is just the classical, let's try a thing. The other one is more stats-driven. What are the criteria in your mind when it's okay to do the stats-driven version, or is it never okay?
Well, okay is a big word, right?
Of course, I'm very vague on purpose.
Here's what I think, and I put this in the video also. There are certain things that are a better fit for this type of testing, like a content headline, right? Excuse me. You might be a very skilled writer, but you might come up with 6 different catchy headlines that you think could perform really well for a particular article. Mm. But it's almost impossible to be extremely confident in advance which of those 6 are really going to be the best performing ones. And so it would be totally normal for you to put those out and do some sort of A-B test or split test to see which one performs best, and then use the best one. Or tuning parameters in video games, right? Those can be very tricky in achieving whatever goal you're looking for. And so, you know, using an A-B testing system for something like that, you know, I think is where it is better suited. And I think there are other decisions that you make as a business that are far less suited for A-B testing, such as product change features. Yeah. So if you think that there's an important direction that you need to take as a business or for your product, and you have a deep understanding of the market and your customers and where the world is going, and you put out a product change in support of that, and it comes back with a very slightly but statistically significant negative impact on mm-hmm. one of your metrics, what do? Do you not ship that? Like, and this is where many of the decisions that are made by just looking at an A-B test with and having this expectation of precision that it's going to be able to tell you exactly what the future is going to be don't hold true, right? One of the core argument that I made in the video is that a lot of the process around A-B testing was taken from academia and very strictly controlled clinical experiments into the business world, where it doesn't fit as well. Mm-hmm. So your experiments right now, you might have an effect size that would have changed substantially next week because the world changes, right? And so in an academic experiment in the hard sciences, you know, an experiment that you ran 100 years ago or 100 years from now is going to have the same result. But in business, things change week to week sometimes. And so the idea that we've got this confidence in our A-B tests because of when we ran them and the way that we ran them and how we were even able to run some of these tests. Like, for example, it's very easy to trade off long-term and short-term results, where you can add high-pressure sales tactics or add a bunch of fees at the end of a long checkout process mm-hmm. to an e-commerce site. You'll be able to bump up your average customer value, but what does that do to your brand equity? And how do you manage, how do you measure that in an A-B test? You can't. And so there are these very large categories of things that you can't measure well and have very important implications for your business. And so when you limit yourself to only launching features that do well in an A-B test. Well, what does that even mean? Also, if you have five metrics that you're tracking in an A-B test and three of them have a very slight improvement and one is neutral and one is negative, like, does that mean you do it or you don't do it? And this is where I think a lot of companies try to be very scientific about decision making in a way that doesn't fit well with business decision making. And that's where I've seen the failures of A-B testing.
I think I've definitely run into situations in the past, like exactly as you say, where you run a feature test and you're looking at a constellation of metrics, like whatever, guardrails and what have you. And some go up, some go down, and you're left with maybe a slightly negative, as you mentioned, statistically significant result. And now you're left with what do we do? The way I view it, and I don't completely disagree with you. There's a lot of things you called out. It's like, yeah, I relate to that 100%. I think my perspective is kind of like, okay, we kind of know what it's going to do, but now we have some sort of measure of the risk, you know? And then using our knowledge of the market, we're like, okay, we can live with this. Let's go forward. I've never been one of those people to go, if it's a negative result, don't push it out. Because sometimes strategically it makes sense. Sometimes you have to unlock features in the future. But my perspective is I'd like to know whether we're going to blow up everything. You know, is there a slam dunk in there? Like, we're going to have like minus 25% and then maybe we shouldn't ship this out. But that's my perspective. I'd love to hear your take.
I think that's totally reasonable. And I think that non-dogmatic way of looking at A-B testing is realistically what people are doing more often. Mm-hmm. And because, well, for a couple of reasons. Number one, it is very smart to look at it, to make sure you don't make any disastrous changes when you roll things out, right? Did you accidentally remove the add to cart button with this new code change? So having is sort of a canary in the coal mine type of approach to A-B testing where you intend to ship it. You are doing some very basic testing to make sure that nothing disastrous happens to your data, not just your, you know, code tests. And assuming that everything is okay, then you ship it and you move on. I think that's a totally reasonable way to approach development and to approach building features, et cetera. So all of that is totally, I think it makes sense. What I think doesn't make sense is when people start to get extremely pedantic around, and I've seen this many times, where product leaders, business, et cetera, there's an expectation that things need to go up. And in a complex environment, somebody is going to say, oh, well, if this makes revenue go down, why would we do it? And then organizationally, it's very difficult to turn around and say, well, how confident are we even that it did make revenue go down when said revenue went down by 1%? Are we really sure that revenue went down by 1%? Mm-hmm. Or is that statistical noise? Because many of these experiment or A-B tests, as we do them in the wild, have statistical noise. Many A-B testing systems aren't always implemented fully correctly. There's race conditions in JavaScript in certain situations. And there's like a lot of things that, you know, many A-B testing systems are blocked by ad blockers on JavaScript. And so the question is, of the 40% of people that use ad blockers online, might their behavior be more than 1% different than the people that aren't blocked in your A-B test? And could that, like, to what degree could that change things for you? And this is where, again, I think being any decision internally where you're looking at something and being really, really confident about these generally small effect size changes, I don't think that is the right way to be thinking about the business decisions that you're making. I think on the opposite side, the testing of the headlines to say, hey, this headline on the ad got us, you know, 5x the click-through rate of this other headline on an ad. Yeah, go with the better one every time. So
yeah, and I think that's one of the harder things, at least with business leaders, to, you know, they don't want to screw up. They want to cover their butts a lot. but they often don't have that nuanced understanding of things, like the caveats and all the results, like, as you mentioned, the ad blocker,
all these things that some platforms can't handle or report on well or help someone interpret. And without the help of good tools to help guide decision making,
people get focused and hooked on to a thing, make decisions off that, and it just perpetuates. And so it's like, in the absence of any data, they take any data and they make wild decisions. But the one thing we did learn in school is like 95% confidence. That's a good thing, which is a very, I like to say, a graceful segue into something that you mentioned in your video around 95% confidence. And it's something that you and Ron Kohavi had a little bit of a conversation around. For those who haven't seen the video, and I'll link it down to below, what are the issues or some issues with the 95% confidence?
Sure. I'll go through what I said in the video and Ron's response, and then we can talk a little bit about that. Yeah. So in the video, what I said was that most of the A/B tests that I've seen, people have wanted to get to 95%, you know, a p-value of 0.05 to say that a result is statistically significant, and which is sort of a 95% confidence level. And in my experience in business, you're almost never making 95% confident decisions. It's like, what kind of bar are we holding ourselves to? What business decision are you 95%? Any major business decision, you're not going to be 95% confident. In fact, you might want to say it's the opposite side. You might want, so let's say we should make it 70 or 80% confident. But maybe we should do the opposite. Maybe we should say, if I'm a product manager and I deeply understand my customers and my market, and we have a hypothesis about where the business is going, and therefore we've built a feature that we want to deploy towards what the company needs to do in the future. Shouldn't you need to be 70% sure that I'm wrong before you ship it, to 70% sure that I'm right before you accept it?
Just not to interrupt, but it's like, if you're disagreeing with your boss, essentially, it's that situation where they want you to do X, Y, Z, and you have to prove them wrong. And that's a very awkward situation.
This is Roma Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week, we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch. Now back to the episode.
Well, I mean, let's run with that analogy, because I think it's a good one. Imagine your boss says something and they say, I think that this is how the future is going to be, right? Yeah. Yeah. If you were to go back to them and say, well, there isn't a less than 5% chance that you're wrong. What would they respond to that? They would say, who cares? You'd be laughed out of the room. On the opposite side, if you go to them and say, hey, there's like at least a 70% chance that you're wrong on this, or at least an 80% chance you're wrong on this, they'd probably appreciate it, right? Yeah. And I think that's where in the point that I made in the video is that I think that when everybody uses 95%, you know, is expecting 95% confidence, it's just not a fit for business decision making, as opposed to an academia where you're looking for 95% confidence because other academics are going to cite your article as essentially truth, and it's going to sort of be used as a foundational piece to build more science on top of, and there's an expectation that it doesn't change. It's a totally different world than in business.
Now, to your point, like before, as you mentioned earlier, is like the world of business changes frequently, week to week. Seasonality impacts everything. Macro factors impact it. And while academia tries to isolate all those factors as much as possible, it's less reliable in a business context.
Exactly. I mean, it's just so obvious, right? If you have like a merchandising A/B test in the winter and you've got winter coats or bathing suits, you're going to sell more winter coats. And then 6 months later, that's not going to be true anymore.
Yeah.
It's just, and so to what degree is the world changing at an effect in a way that affects your business more than the effect size of your typical A-B test. And that's where, again, I think that's where some of these experiments don't fit so well. Ron's point was fascinating. And I was new, like I hadn't heard of his thing before. And he said that my point was incorrect, and that 95% confidence, when people in business think they're getting 95% confidence, they're not. They're actually getting closer to 75% confidence, because we already know through a large amount of work done at a number of large companies that the false positive rate is far higher than would have been expected looking at p-value of 0.05. And therefore, we need to take those additional failure rates into account to say that when we think it's 0.95, when we think it's 95%, it's actually closer to 75%. Mm-hmm. And then he said in that comment that he stopped watching my video after that, which was the first point. But then later on, we continued the conversation in a Google Doc. You can check it all out on LinkedIn.
I'll link those in the comments.
Yeah. So I was a little frustrated initially that he had stopped watching the video, but I reached out to him and we had a totally nice back and forth conversation where he had his points and I had my points. So that was totally and completely resolved. I think that makes the case against A-B testing far stronger, because one of the things that I had in the video is that the business world in general is not interpreting and using these A-B testing systems correctly. And I've been in it. Like, I've seen A-B testing. I have never seen a business person say, okay, we've gotten to 95% confidence or a p-value of 0.05, that means that we're actually only 75% confident. They expect that it actually means 95% confidence. And this is a perfect example, again, of this over-precision and false confidence in these systems, which are not able to be as statistically exact as a lay business person who's not a statistics person.
It does sound like a communication problem, though.
Sure, exactly.
Instead of using these particular numbers, a lot of context seems to be missing.
Yes, but it's also unreasonable to expect that business people are ever going to get to that context.
Right.
And so this is where it's all about the difference between what you get sold and what you get, right? If what you get sold is extremely high confidence in this number, 95% confidence, and then what you get overwhelmingly is 75% confidence, I think that's a big problem in the industry. I think 15 years,
A-B
testing has been super popular. And after 15 years, even I didn't know that the 95% confidence is actually only 75% confidence due to the academic literature showing that we can't trust these results as much as we think. So,
well, I think there's still, well, obviously I still think there's value to it, but I do think the communication of these facts, the industry could be way better at. And I don't think the academic terms help our cause at all. Like, confidence sounds like confidence, you know? 95 sounds like a great score on a test. It's just, it shoots itself in the foot, and maybe we need to rethink how we phrase things. But as you point out, maybe a lot of business leaders may not be able to absorb or grasp all these things, because I know when I present stuff, they kind of glaze over some of this stuff. So I wanted to jump onto a point that you mentioned where Ron was talking about his experience at Microsoft, and he's pulling all this data. And you, in one of the comments you left in the document, that you felt that was not representative of the world. I want to dig into that, because that's something that I've heard a lot in LinkedIn, at least. I was wondering if you could elaborate on what that means.
Sure. I mean, I think that My understanding of his team at Microsoft or Bing, where he was doing, and just I read his LinkedIn profile, and he had a team of, you know, 50 people building an experiment platform. And I imagine many of those people are PhDs, and they're all Microsoft. It's one of those things where I'm sure that they had over the years many of the same challenges that a typical business has with A/B testing. I'm sure that not all of them, but some of them, they were able to overcome because they just invested so heavily in it. And I'm just taking his word for the fact that they had an excellent process and system that led to good business results where they were able to tune things effectively. I think the Bing and search engine use case is probably a little bit more close to like the video game tuning than it is to like very broad decision making, because it's sort of like you're tuning different algorithms for search results or the size of the font for what people see, but it's like a pretty constrained use case of search, whereas most businesses are testing like a lot of things that aren't as constrained. But I'm gonna totally take his word for it. But I think the investment that a Microsoft or Google or some of these other companies are making around very sort of thin product use cases don't translate necessarily so well to many other businesses.
And I think that's fair. That's one of the commentaries I've often heard where, okay, you have all these learnings from Microsoft, but I have one fraction of the traffic you have. I have 1/10 of the resources, not even. So we're not entirely confident. So I don't know how applicable some of the stuff you're saying is to me. But yeah, I get it. You try to take it for face value. You try to apply it as you can, but at the same time, you have these doubts in your head. Let me see here. You know, I've been peppering you with a lot of questions. I was wondering if there's anything you want to share with our audience, what's going on with your company, with yourself, that you'd like our audience to know.
Yeah, I mean, I guess one important thing to recognize about this is just my opinion on the state of the industry. I have no financial bone in this topic. Like, Delivery Layer is not in the A/B testing world. Delivery Layer mostly powers B2B applications.
And I just want to call out that I think a lot of your challenges are fair. It's things that we've all gone through. And I think a conversation is warranted. You know, it's like, obviously there's still a belief that A/B testing, we all agree experimentation is good, but A/B testing in its current form isn't perfect. We know this, we know it's not perfect. And we know that we should bring more common sense to it, more context to the analysis. What does it take to get us to the next level? I actually don't know, but I know we're not there yet. So I appreciate a lot of these points that you brought up.
Thank you. I appreciate it. And I will give you full credit. Like, when I put this video out and the conversation was happening, you know, you're like, hey, come on, let's talk about it. I think that's a good thing, right? It shows that, like, the important part here is having everybody, you know, get all the thoughts and ideas and perspectives on the table.
I just alluded to it, I guess. I saw it back and I watched the video. I'm like, yeah, he's lived the life, man. It's all the things that, mind you, I didn't agree with the conclusion of like, let's push off A/B testing. So I still think there's value to it. But at the same time, I don't have a solution. You know, I don't right now. I don't know how to get to that spot to get the industry there. But I liked that it brought up the conversation. It goes, no, things are screwed up at the very least. And having that conversation with Ron, poking things at it as well, that can't do anything but help the conversation.
Thank you. Yeah, and I agree. And you know, I think, you know, I've been in data for a while, and I think that these we continue to advance through like, you know, having things go head to head and seeing what works and what doesn't work. Yeah. In terms of the A/B testing systems, I because you know, you kind of brought up the point of what does the future look like. I do think that they are well situated to be used in that sort of like metrics driven common sense decision making approach, where if you're making a change and you're looking at a couple of different metrics, the sort of overly scientific reliance on whether something is changed by 2% or 3% or 0% might not be where I would go. But having them to be able to see, did we just drop revenue by 30%? That's a good use. And I think that the more data that people have as they make decisions, it does allow them to experiment faster. And I think that the end point of the video was we should be experimenting faster. Yeah. If you start the quarter and you say, compared to where I think we could be as a business, our conversion rate for this funnel is way lower, or our churn rate is too high, our churn rate should be substantially lower based on everything that we know, and you come up with 18 different ideas to go and impact that churn rate, the question is, do you want to implement one, wait for a while, try to see what the impact of that one is, implement the other, wait for a while, or do you want to just zoom and try to go as fast as you can, making all those changes? And you look at the end of the quarter, and then you say, all right, what did we see that the impact of these things were? Although, frankly, churn is a great example of something that's tough to A-B test, because the impact of the decisions that you made might not impact churn for another 8 months.
Yeah, and so, that's usually where a holdout is, but there's a lot of complications in holdouts as well.
A lot of complications, because you might have to keep two versions of the same code base running for 8 months for just one holdout test. So suddenly you get 8 or 9 holdout tests to try. And this is where it's like, okay, if you want to impact churn, then maybe you should just do all of the changes and see what happens, as opposed to try to do holdout tests for very complicated systems changes.
Yeah. There's always this question, right? Like when you hold out a group and you're making fixes to your site, that's basic things, you know, like bug fixes. Do you hold out the bug fixes too? And who gets in and out of your control group? Because over time, it's the quality, the audience membership is going to decrease because people just bounce off your site and never come back. So your holdout's getting smaller. So you have to let people in. What are the rules to get? There's a lot of setup. You can't just, you know, go straight out with a holdout. But yeah, I mean, you'd use that if you could, in an ideal world, but yeah, it is challenging sometimes.
Yeah, definitely.
But I do think that there are some really complicated, risky stuff that we need to test.
Sure.
Before, like in a small group or what have you. But I've always, always promoted, like, don't just trust the data. If it's a winner, it doesn't matter. You need to look at the bigger picture. You need to have the long-term strategy. You need to have a lot of eyes on it. It's just a piece of the whole puzzle to make a decision. Unfortunately, I think a lot of people just see, you know, A, B, whatever wins by X, Y, Z, and let's push it forward without thinking, you know, holistically and long term.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Well, you know what? To me, I see that as a good sign that, you know, when I put out the video, I was always like, all right, you know, when you say something that's against what a lot of people think, you're always like, am I going to sound crazy? I don't think I sound crazy, but you never know when you go against the grain so hard, whether that's going to like come off well.
I think PMs will go, yeah, he's got it. Product managers. But I think CROs will be more like, oh, come on, man. I've been in both, so it's fine. So for those who want to continue this conversation with you, where can they find you?
Yeah. So the best place is on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn,
you find that thread exactly.
Yeah. Solomon, we should post the thread in the comments, but LinkedIn, Solomon Khan, K-A-H-N, follow along. I post a lot about data stuff, and, I'm sure that this conversation about A-B testing will, keep going.
Yeah, for sure. And for the listeners, I'd love to hear your thoughts on everything that was said today. Leave them in the comments. Send me an email, salesolomon@email. Let's keep this conversation going. I think it's a great topic, and thank you for listening. Have a good day.
All right, thank you.
This is Roma Santiago from Experiment Nation. Every week, we share interviews with and conference sessions by our favorite conversion rate optimizers from around the world. So if you like this video, smash that like button and consider subscribing. It helps us a bunch.